You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
This is episode 71 of our little podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Good evening.
Welcome back, gents.
How are you doing?
Very well, very well. Tough weekend.
Yeah, it's gone quickly. It only seems like 5 minutes ago we did the last podcast.
Yeah, it does. But you two have been playing lots of Warhammer between then and now.
Yeah, we have.
At the Unicorn. So we're going to be talking about that later on in the podcast. We're also going to be talking through all the latest news, because we actually had some surprise announcements yesterday, in fact.
We did, a bit of a news dump from the Nuremberg Toy Fair. Yeah. Lots of specialist games, love. Yeah. Some of which might have already been teased a bit on Sprues and Brews the previous week.
Potentially. So we're going to talk about all those in the news. With the recent announcement that the Warhammer Studio team are redoing some of the Forge World data sheets for 40k, we wanted to base our top three around that this week. So we're going to be looking at our top three Forge World data sheets that we hope will be changed or bought into 40k.
Yeah.
So that's referring to like the Horus Heresy ones and things. So that's all later on. I think that's about it, isn't it? Do we have Yeah, of course it is. Brain's not working this evening. But before all that, we're going to talk through what we've been doing in the hobby. Oh, we will have a segment just on the Unicorns event, I think. So if you guys could talk about your other goings-on in the hobby and save your gaming until later on in the podcast, that'd be grand. So Matt, do you want to start us off with what you've been doing since the last podcast?
Yeah, so since the last podcast, I have built and started painting the Triumph of St. Catherine. It's an awesome kit.
Got the airbrush out.
Done some wings on the cherubs. Done up the base. The base is pretty much done. There's a few metal bits to do, but
I'm really impressed with the base. When I saw the thing, it's like on two levels, isn't it? It's really smart.
Yeah,
it's
I think I can smell the incense from here.
Yeah. And just started on the various bearers. So not much long left on those. Also did some bone reapers. Now we're thinking of doing a bit of a narrative campaign set in Heesh. And I thought, okay, well, we're Bone Reapers. We're not going to go Petrifax Elite, because that'd be silly.
Phew.
So I thought, well, what about Bone Reapers made out of ether quartz? Now, this is a substance that has been recently shown off in some of the recent Warhammer community posts that the Lumineth use as a way to contain their emotions so they don't get corrupted by Slaanesh.
It's like a big power pack for the elves, I think. Yeah. They can use them to charge their abilities.
Now, I do wonder if, spent ether quartz packed full of raw emotion is something that you necessarily want hanging around. Who knows? But, yeah, so in my invented lore, these bone reapers are blended with bone material and ether quartz for nefarious reasons that Nagash is no doubt interested in.
Nice.
Pointy elves for. And then finally, just about finished Gore Halfhorn, and done a bit of work on my next Necromunda Ganga. I want to try and get these guys done because, I'm eager to play some Necromunda.
Cool. Yeah, looking really good. Very, very good. You're loving your airbrush at the moment. You can tell that.
Yeah, I think I might have to invest in one with a fine nozzle at some point because, it's a godsend. It really is.
Yeah, they're looking fantastic. Really, really nice. What have you been doing in the hobby this week, Jay?
So this week has been recovering from the weekend. However, prior to the weekend, I was painting my Dwardim. So I had a couple of late night sessions painting gyrocopters, hammerers, and Gotrek himself.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Which was an ace model to paint, yeah.
If you check out our Twitter, I'm sure there's some photos up there.
There's some, we'll talk about it in more detail later on, but there's some epic photos of Gotrek getting stuck into some gobbos. But I'm sure you'll discuss that later on in the podcast when you talk about your games over the weekend.
He had a good time. Other than that, I have been busy researching everything I can about the High Elves and coming up with ideas for this campaign we're running and different tiles and areas of the map we can battle in.
We've not really done a narrative like map campaign before. We've always talked about it, but it's like, a lot of time investment in doing all your lore and getting it set up, and yeah, you've gone right into this with them. You've got a few months, haven't you, until the elves come out, so
yeah,
gives you an outlet for your elf love until then.
That's it, yeah.
I think that's the main reason behind this, isn't it?
I've started planning some scenery I'm going to be building over the next few weeks and painting for the campaign.
You know he's serious when he's even thinking of making scenery.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I've started trying to figure out what design I want on my custom dice for the army.
Wow.
I'm very excited about this release.
Pointy ears, obviously, is the number sixes.
On the dice.
Yeah, that's got to be right? Cool. This week, for me, has mainly been about building the contents of Aetherwar, or more specifically, the Caradhran Overlords side of Aetherwar. You very kindly, Matt, undercoated me some Arcanaut Company, because they discontinued the Fang Spray, which is how I painted my old ones.
Yeah, hopefully the colour matches okay.
I think it does.
Fang, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's the same pot as it is the spray. So I was going to start painting those Arcanauts, but I thought I'd best get my engine riggers, my gun hauler, and the engine master built first. Nearly finished all the engine riggers, and then I'll do the suit and the gun hauler. I did also get Brock as well, who I built.
Yes.
But I don't think I'm actually going to be using him in the list now.
He's a nice model to paint up there.
He's a very nice model, and I will be using him in the future.
He's not the one from A4s, he's the original character.
He's the original guy in the dirigible suit, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So we'd split the Aetherwar box, and there should be a video coming up on the site in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
We had a game as well, didn't we?
We did have a game. So it's been a very long time since I played with the Caradhran Overlords, and I think it's been a while since you played with Zeech.
Yeah, certainly not with the new book.
No, well, we both not used the new book before, so we decided to have a quick 1,000-point game. It was the Valor, scenario better was Valor. Better Part of Valor. Jay wasn't even there and knows what it was. Better Part of Valor. It's safe to say I think I was a bit too ballsy in the first turn.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'd taken a fairly filthy Zeench list because most of the models I had were, you know, Flamers and Horrors and all of the casters.
Whereas I had an Admiral, an Ironclad, two units of Arcanauts, and a unit of Thunderers.
Yeah, and an Ironclad's like more than half your army in that list.
But I really wanted to see how much shooting he could do.
And he could do a lot of shooting.
He could do an awful lot of shooting.
I think if he'd have just stayed slightly out of range of my shooting, you'd have probably been all right. But he was just close enough for me to shoot you and then charge you.
The problem, it was your Horrors moved up, and then using Destiny dice got a guaranteed charge. And then, like you said, whilst we were having the game, I had the Last Word relic on the Ironclad, which allows you to basically fire Overwatch with your main weapon, which for me is the volley gun, which is 4d6 shots. But all that did to Pink Horrors is turn them into Blue Horrors, giving you more attacks. So it was kind of
You made the little 10-man unit bigger.
Yeah, I mean, there was more Horrors in combat with me than actually charged. But it was really fun. We didn't play it through to the end, mainly because I only had one unit of Arcanaut Company left. And an Admiral, which was surrounded by Horrors.
One and a half times my army with summons and stuff.
Yeah, well, this is it with Zeech, because you usually gaunt summoner to bring in another unit of Horrors, and then you summon some Screamers towards the end.
Yeah.
So it was still really fun, though, and I think I'm definitely going to have loads of fun with the Caradhrans.
Yeah, you don't have to charge anything, Dave, either. Just
don't have to charge anything. I can just stand there and I can just shoot things.
That sounds like a plan.
Which is great, and move around.
I know you had one big ship, but I think multiple ships as multiple threats will make them really good.
Yeah. And making the most of garrisons. And I think I'm going to try out Barak Zon. I was using Barak Nar for that battle, but Barak Zon allows you to ignore the -1 on bravery when using Aether Gold, and you get loads of extra Aether Gold, basically.
Awesome.
So lots of rerolls, which is nice.
So yeah, we'll have to have a rematch at 2,000 points soon then.
Yes. Hopefully this weekend.
Yeah, sounds maybe. Good.
Excellent. Well, that is what we've been up to in the past 7 days. We're going to take a pause, and we're going to come back with a fairly sizable new section. You would think, after the massive amount of news from LVO last week, that GW might have a slightly quieter week, But they haven't, have they?
No. The hype train has no brakes, Dave.
No.
And yet it has been an epic week for news. I mean, even pre-order-wise, I kind of thought we'd get the rest of the Sisters of Battle, which is, you know, it's a couple of characters, the other tank and the scenery piece. Not a massive release. But we haven't got those yet.
No.
Instead, we have got two warbands for Warhammer Underworlds, which is really cool. So we've got Hrothgorn's Man Rippers, who is an ogre hunter, and his Noblar mates, which is really, really cool. And the Wormspat, which is a Nurgle kind of Blight King faction, led by a Nurgle sorceress.
Reminds me of Joe from Vermintide, the Blight Lord sorcerer. Yeah. That reminds me a bit of that.
So, yeah, there are definitely some influences there, isn't there? But, yeah, these guys look really good. The Nurgle gang has been featured on Warhammer Community today, and they... I think for every shield you roll, you ignore a point of damage to a minimum of one. So they're really, really defensive and tanky, but they're really slow.
Yeah.
So they just kind of waddle away up the battlefield and soak a load of damage.
I didn't see the Nurgle one, but I saw the Ogre one. It may have even been yesterday. And I like the idea that the Noblars like throw traps down and then you use the harpoon from the Ogre to pull them towards it
to do
damage. That's really cool. I really like that. And you can use more lethal hexes and stuff, like you can flip. Well, I haven't played Beastgrave yet, so I know they've got these new flipping objectives into traps and stuff. So yeah. I need to have a game of it.
I brought out my Beastgrave box this week actually, and got all the Tazoks. I've got the plastic scenery that I want to get sprayed and painted this week, so I can start playing some Beastgrave. The Nurgle warband. Then are they? We only saw them at LVO. That was the first we saw them.
That's right.
And
pre-ordered on Saturday.
I'm just thinking, I wonder if the will be out like tomorrow.
So they look really, really cool. I'm going to do the same again and sort out all my cards. I need to work out which ones have been discontinued. I think it's like season one, isn't it? And then put together some lists, which will be fun. Alongside those, there's the usual sleeves and dice, and it's probably worth picking them up because...
Yeah.
It protects the cars and they look nice, don't they?
And they sell out quite quickly.
They do sell out quite quickly, the big ticket item this week, and it's, you know, not that expensive really, is Wrath of the Everchosen.
Mm.
So this is a new expansion book, narrative book, source book, I suppose.
New battle tome as well, really.
Kind of.
It's got new allegiance abilities.
All sorts of stuff in. So yeah, it has got 14 new allegiances for Chaos. Everything from mixed demons... Which is great, because back in Warhammer that was, I played Mixed Demons, so I'm hoping there's some kind of summoning mechanic in there. There might not be, because you're getting the advantage of having multiple different demons, but that could be fun. There's some really cool stuff, like one that lets you take 5 Bloodthirsters, which is also really cool. And then there's Bellicor's personal army.
Oh, Bellicor's
where
cool,
he gets stronger depending on how many demons of different allegiances are near him. So that'd be cool. I've not got the Bellicor model, so...
I'm surprised you didn't mention in that little selection, because you're such a big fan of them, the Varangard one.
So this turns all Varangard into heroes, which for some scenarios could be quite tasty. And because they're heroes, you can give them artifacts.
And command traits, yeah.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting. Varangard is super expensive.
Yeah.
But and I think I'd probably still take them in the Everchosen list. But yeah, there's 14 there, that's really, really cool. I mean, that's not even the bulk of the book. The main kind of thrust is the narrative about the Bone Reapers invading the Varanspire.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I think is really cool about that is the one where you can take mixed demons. See, I like the Keeper of Secrets, but I would probably never collect a Slaanesh army. That would be the perfect reason to get a Keeper of Secrets.
Yeah, that's really cool. Because it's part of your army, it's not, you know, ally points or anything, which is awesome.
No.
So this narrative tells us what Archaon's been up to, because we've said before on the podcast, he's kind of, Nagash has been the main focus recently, Archaon's been doing stuff in the Varanspire. So yeah, big battle there. As it is a siege, there are siege rules, including stuff like there's a phase where people can starve because the castle's besieged.
Nice.
So, if only we knew somebody who had a Warhammer Fortress.
Ha ha! Well, yes we do. So we might have to try and incorporate that into our narrative campaign, because it was confirmed.
By might, you mean absolutely include it.
Absolutely include. Because we actually found out today that every army is going to have rules for siege.
Yeah, every army that's got a battle tome, including the Lizardmen, who Seraphon, who are coming out soon, are going to have faction rules for these sieges. So to represent the different styles of armies, because Bone Reapers in a siege, they don't care if they're starving; they're skeletons.
Yeah.
So yeah, some cool, interesting stuff.
And I think, is it in the first turn in a siege battle, if they're the attackers, they get +1 to the save.
Yeah, stacking all their ridiculous saves. Oh, stuff. Yeah,
Petrifax with 1+ rerollable saves. Excellent.
So, but that's, you know, it's to represent their ways of going to war. And again, this is very much, I believe, a narrative book with lots of new ways to play, new stories and battle plans and stuff.
Well, it'll be interesting to see the battle plans, and that's the thing that excites me the most, because especially if we're doing this campaign this summer, it'd be nice to have some narrative battle plans that we can adapt for different armies.
I think this is coming out at a really good time for us, because we can start incorporating these into what we want to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is, I've only got the euro prices for these, €40 for that, and €25 for the Underworlds gang, so £30-ish for the Ever Chosen book, and I think they're £17.50, the Underworlds gangs.
They're
not expensive. So yeah, in non-miniature related news, Warhammer Underworlds Online has just been launched in early access on Steam. I say it's on Steam, I think Steam's currently down at the minute.
It's been down all afternoon.
Yeah, so you can't buy it right now. Well, maybe you can by the time this podcast goes out, but
yeah.
I think it's about £22, I want to say. I bought it last night, had a few games. It is early access, so it's not, you know, completely polished full release, but, you know, all the functionality's there. At the minute, you can play against the AI or join random opponents online. Early next week, they're putting a patch out that lets you do games against your friends.
Cool.
So we're going to have to get on that.
Good news, Matt. Steam's back up. It's £23.99.
That's pretty good.
You get the four starting factions, don't you?
You do. So you get the Stormcast faction, the Garrix Reavers Khorne, you get the Orc guys.
And you get
the Iron Jaws and the Sepulchral Guard. Yeah. To start with, you will get access to all universal cards,
right,
and then you can buy other gangs as DLC. I quite like that all the universal cards are available to everyone, so you don't have to buy all that DLC if you don't want to.
No.
Which is quite a nice way of doing it.
Yeah, I think so.
So that's really exciting. I had a play last night, won a few games of that, which was cool. Looking forward to playing you guys, because I think we're going to be able to get more games of Underworlds in by playing it on the computer than we would do, you know, playing it on a games night.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so out of nowhere, we had some news from the Nuremberg Toy Fair.
Which I didn't even know was happening.
I didn't even know it was happening. We had received word of some rumours the previous week, and one of the things that we heard is on this list. Now, other things on that list, such as the Sons of Bayamat, now, I mean, it already seemed fairly likely it was coming, but yeah. That, for me, pretty much sells the rest of this rumour list that we'd been past. So, yeah, the first bit of news for Aeronautica Imperialis, we have the brand new Skies of Fire boxed game, which pitches the Tau against the Astra Militarum. So we've already got Aeronautica, what's the
Imperial Navy
faction, and we've already got the Orc faction. This adds two new factions to the game.
Yeah,
now there is some crossover with the Navy and the Astra Militarum,
but they have their own,
but they're distinct factions. I believe you get in the box, which is out in April, so not long to wait, 2 Valkyries, 3 Avengers, 2 Tiger Sharks and 3 Barracudas. Playmat, which I believe in the starter box first time was paper, but they had the option of a card stock one, which I think I'd probably pick up if I was going to do it, because again, they disappear quickly, like the Blood Bowl pictures. And dice and your basic rules for playing the game. Alongside this is the Taros Air War campaign book, which has got all the profiles for everything, has a narrative campaign and rules for like low altitude battles and stuff. So it sounds like, as a self-contained game, the box is brilliant. If you want to start using the other factions and make, you know, your army lists and stuff, you want to pick up the Taros Air War book.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool. I am really tempted to pick up Aeronautica now that this box is coming out. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, the Tau faction does... I love the Barracuda models, so they do look nice, but I'm waiting for the Eldar.
It's interesting that they're bringing out these new armies in boxed games as well. I quite like that.
Yeah.
You know, rather than you get the one big box game and then buy the individual ships.
Maybe we'll get Space Marines versus Eldar.
Yeah, maybe.
If they keep up the Imperials versus Xenos.
I'm trying to think now. Didn't they when Aeronautica was first released, didn't they sort of do some lore?
They did some artwork.
Some stories and stuff, didn't they? Mm. And who were the Tau fighting the Imperial army in that?
Don't think so.
Do you know, the Eldar were featuring some of the artwork.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether that's... I have to go back.
I'm sure every 40k faction at some point will get something for the game. But yeah, I think it suffered from what a few specialist games have suffered of, with lack of factions.
Yeah.
Where now there's a mixture of people. You know, the Navy and the Militarum are pretty close, really, but at least there's different ships that you can mix and match. So yeah, I think
different
this would be cool.
Different planes. Ships go in the water.
Sorry, different planes. For Necromunda, we've got a new expansion coming. Now, this kind of came out of nowhere. House of Chains.
Yeah, I really like these models.
Yeah.
They're very cool.
So this is essentially, I want to say, a codex, I suppose, for the Goliaths. It's an expansion all about the Goliaths with a load of new lore about them and some gorgeous new models.
I think... the Goliaths and the Escher gangs were the first gangs we saw for Necromunda, and when you compare them now with their sprues to the Vansar, to I can't remember the last ones who came out.
Corpse Grinders, yeah.
They've come quite a long way in such a short amount of time. This kind of refreshes the Goliath range with these.
Yeah. I think essentially you've got your Juves, who currently you'd use just Goliath models and say that's a Juve. Mm-hmm. Where now it looks like they've got a new unit, the Forgeborn. So these are new young initiates, eager to impress the gang with some really cool weapons like buzzsaws and stuff.
Yeah,
and I think I have the feeling that these will become like the Juves in this new book.
Yeah,
and you'll have distinct models so you can tell the difference.
Female Goliath members as well.
Female Goliaths, yeah. There's also the Stimmers. Now, Goliaths are big fellas, but these are massive, bulking guys who have completely pumped their body full of combat drugs and growth chems.
Yeah. And decided to strap massive guns on their arms.
Well, you would do, wouldn't you?
Basically, they saw Space Marine Centurions and thought, I can do that. So they put a backpack of armour, ammunition and two massive cannons.
Yeah, so these look really, really cool, and I've got the feeling we'll probably see one of these for every faction.
Yeah,
coming down the line. And some people said, "Well, it was nice when everything was in that one big book. It gives you more. You don't have to get these. You can still use those old profiles." I imagine at some point they might bring out a new compilation with just the profiles, not the lore and stuff. But yeah, any Necromunda loves good, and especially when we're starting our campaign soon as well.
Exactly,
really helps. For Adeptus Titanicus, on the 8th of February, we have a new starter box up for pre-order.
Mm.
This looks really, really good. So you get the full rules, you get the command terminals, you get all the cards, all the dice, all the templates, everything you need to play the game, 2 Reaver Titans, both weapon sprues for the Reavers, 2 Warhounds, 2 Cerastus Knights. That is a really good box if it is... price, I'm going to guess, £100 starter box price.
Yeah,
yeah. I was going to say, I think it's going to be around the same price as the Grandmaster, isn't it?
I think it'll be cheaper than the Grandmaster. Okay. I think this is pitched to a more... I think the Grandmaster was too expensive for people getting into the game.
How much was the Grandmaster?
About £175.
Yeah.
It
came with 2 Warlord Titans and a load of scenery.
Yeah.
Where this is... The way they've done it, if you've already got the Grandmaster Edition and you buy this, you've got 2 of each Titan. So you can make multiple different... battle groups.
Maniples,
yeah. So, yeah, really good. And again, you could split this with a friend and have, a couple of Titans and a couple of Knights each, and, the rules between you, it's not as big of an investment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know the essentially start collecting Adeptus Titanicus disappeared recently, and there's a Knight box out now, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
So, yeah, I hope this gets lots of people into the game. I know it's been super, super popular. And I know we keep tempting Dave to buy Tiny Titans.
Yeah, you do. I do like my robots.
Alongside this, we don't know if it's at the same time or in the same kind of release window, is the plastic Warbringer Titan.
Now, you've been mentioning you wanted an Adeptus Titanicus version of this for quite some time.
I love the Warbringer. It is ridiculous. It is a siege Titan.
Yeah.
You park it... 100 miles down the road, and it shoots things with its massive cannon. The Death Corps of Krieg would fully approve of this Titan. And it's coming to Titanicus in a really nice looking kit. I think we said at the time, one of the advantages of everything being digitally sculpted now is they can just scale it down and, yeah, essentially it'll be the same kit, but littler.
Looks fantastic, yeah.
Which is really cool. There's new scenery. There are cranes. Cranes for Titanicus and little crates and little bunkers and stuff. They've suggested you could use this as basing material for your Titans or combined it with some of the other buildings to make a really awesome layout. I assume these are a plastic kit as well.
Yeah, I
just
think so.
Just imagine that, you know, some Titans have been through your city, trashed all the buildings, so all the civilians bring out all the cranes to fix it all, and then next week you have another battle with all the Titans smashing through all the city again.
Yeah, I imagine those cranes are getting some work done during the
wasn't in battles. Pacific Rim where he picks up the containers, doesn't he? Does he use a crane
he
as a
uses,
sword?
No, he uses a massive ship.
That's it, yeah.
He picks up. But he does get two containers and smash them to the side of one of the
kaiju.
Yeah.
Well, now you can recreate that. Yeah. There's also a new source book coming out, Shadow in Iron, which tells the tale of the betrayal at Kalth. Where some space marines got slapped in the face by some word bearers. More space marines, yeah. This has more Titan legions in there. It's going to have the rules, presumably, for the Warbringer and some new maniples. It also features Psi Titans.
When I read this, I thought, I need to go and read all about Psi Titans. I think this book is what's going to get me back into Adeptus Titanicus because I really want to build some Warlord Psi Titans. Yeah. They have such cool backstories. It's so nice.
Well, I think this, again, if we can get them done in the next few weeks, 8th of February isn't too far off, is it? Dave, you better get some Titans.
As long as, well, see, what's stopped me from buying them so far is you guys had the initial wave of excitement, but as with everything, but there's so many games that we have to play, it kind of took
we have
back
to play them, Dave.
So,
I'm all up for that. I'm going to buy a Warbringer or three. And that is the news, Dave.
That is the news. Some very surprised. I mean, we did wonder, because we didn't see any specialist games at LVO, and obviously we'd heard the rumours about Aeronautica, but it makes sense doing it like this, doesn't it? Having it at a different event and stagger it out a little bit. And it also makes what was looking like a fairly quietish news week suddenly a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, Gibbs, for sure.
Yeah, thanks, G-Dubs. Right, so that's a cool news segment. I'll tell you what we're going to be talking about next. We're going to be talking about the Purple Sparkle Unicorns event that happened last weekend. I'm looking forward to this because I wasn't there.
You can relive it with us.
I can relive this. So grab a new drink and keep listening. So last weekend in a quiet little village called Williston, which is quite close to us here in Crewe, 32 gamers descended upon the little village hall and took part in 2 days' worth of Age of Sigmar gaming.
Yeah, so it was an awesome event. 2,000 points, 5 games over 2 days in the Descent of the Faithful.
Yes.
An epic confrontation from the Purple Sparkly Unicorns, who, don't be misled by their fluffy name, they are ruthless at Warhammer.
They are. Quite a few tournament veterans are within the ranks of the Unicorns.
Yes, but, you know, the events are always really nice because there is a nice mixture of people. Yes, you've got the people who are really, really good at Warhammer, but you've also got people who are brand new to the game, and then people like us who come and roll some dice and, you know, not necessarily the most powerful list ever, but want to have some fun, which is the most important thing for a tournament as far as I'm concerned.
The atmosphere is great there. Like you say, even though you've got, like, a spectrum of ability there, the atmosphere is fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone, you can tell everyone's having a really good time. There's all laughter and, you know, friendly rivalries going on and things. It's really cool.
Yeah, so this was in the Masonic Hall, which is a bigger venue than some of the events that they've done. Yeah. And, you could probably fit in another few rows of tables in there as well.
Yeah, I heard mutterings of upping it to 40 and things like that. So
yeah, it was really cool. What took the, attention to show up a bit, because, you know, a lot of people might not have heard of the Unicorns, was the fact that the Hobby Room, Kerry of Warhammer TV fame, was there streaming the event.
Yeah, every one of the games.
And you know what? It was really, really well done.
Well, I've seen some footage and it was really well presented.
Yeah.
I saw some ace footage. Oh, it was a remarkable footage of some big chaos guy thinks he saw that. meeting his match. It was amazing. Do you know anything about that, Matt?
I might do. So Kerry streamed it, and really good setup. And fun was had. So, yeah, I guess you guys probably want to know how we got on during the event.
First of all, let's find out. I wasn't there, unfortunately. I had to pull out a few weeks ago. But what I want to know is what lists you both took.
What lists we both took? Well, Dave.
This shouldn't take long for you, Matt.
I took a very familiar list. It had 11 models. Archeon, Gaunt Summoner, 3x3 Varangard, boom. And a spell.
And an endless spell, yeah.
Yeah. You might be familiar with that list, Dave.
Yes, I played this list quite a few times over the past few weeks, accumulating in a battle on Warhammer TV, which I lost.
How you lost? That's a shame. Yeah.
What did you take along, Jay?
I took Gotrek.
Just Gotrek.
Pretty much just Gotrek. The rest of the guys that turned up with him...
cheerleaders.
Yeah, they were just, you know, they just, yeah, they had a great time watching Gotrek and then dying when Gotrek died. I took Dwardin, so I'm a big fan of the dwarfs, and with the release of Cities of Sigmar, talking with you guys, how I could sort of make a playable list with Dwardin. And to be honest, I didn't have that higher hopes for this list. I had Gotrek, some Ironbreakers, some Longbeards, some Hammerers, some Rune Lords, some Warden King. Some Iron Drake, some Gyrocopters. So it was just a fully Dwardin list, using the Living City rules from Cities of Sigmar.
Yeah,
and actually, I was pleasantly surprised with how well they did. I mean, apart from Gotrek, the rest of the army was like, I mean, considering these guys are all wearing Grumbril plate armor and shields, they're not very durable. They don't last very long, you know. I mean,
well, they need to get some Uruk Undercrackers.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they need. I did actually play this list the week before when we were at the club night.
We talked about it.
Was that the first time you'd used that list?
That was first time. Yeah,
I got Gotrek'd.
Yeah, the only change I made for I think was on the Warden King. I gave him a different spell and
a command trait.
Yeah. Mm. So he was a wizard who could cast from the lore of the City of Life.
Dwarf wizards. What madness!
I mean, to be fair, the Warden King died pretty early in most games, but I didn't really get much chance to cast the spell.
Excellent. Well, do you guys want to take it to round by round and discuss your games? Matt, do you want to start off?
Yeah, we started off playing Focal Points, and I was playing Azza and his Bone Reapers. Now, this is the first time I'd played against the Bone Reapers, but I knew a few of their tricks, and I knew they were fairly brutal. And, of course, it was Petrifax Elite, because, you know, why not?
It's a tournament.
And, yeah, it was going all right. Unfortunately, if you've not seen the Ever Chosen list before, they've got a really cool ability where they know who's got the next turn.
Mm.
Unfortunately, even though I knew who had the next turn, it wasn't really going in my favour.
No,
and I never had the double turn of pain where I can just smash face.
Yeah.
So I couldn't be super super aggressive because I knew I was getting double turned myself. So, I wasn't getting that momentum built up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty good until a big block of Stalkers hit me in the flank and pretty much annihilated my army. Those things really, really hurt.
They're the forearm guys, aren't they? With the big swords. Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, they are really cool. I mean, I think the final score was 17-15, so it was a major loss, but if I'd have been able to... Problem with my army is I've not got many models. When I start losing models, I can't hold those objectives. I can't counter-attack quite as hard. Archeon's a beast, but he can only do so much by himself.
Yeah.
The Gaunt Summoner was killed turn one by some catapults, so I never got to summon my horrors. And yeah, it was a pretty cool game.
So that was Matt's first game. How did your first game go, Jay?
So before we start, I had a really great time at this tournament, and this was my third Purple Sparky Unicorns tournament I've been to, and I was lucky enough to play two of my previous opponents in this weekend.
That's always a cool thing.
Yeah, it was good. So my first game was against Lee, who I played at the last 2 day. He was using his Daughters of Cain back then, and I was using my Sylvaneth, and it was one of the most closest, hardest fought game I'd had of Age Sigmar for a long time. I lost that game ultimately against the Daughters of Cain. At the time, the Daughters of Cain were quite a strong army. This time, Lee brought a different army. He brought a Stormcast army, Heldenhammer. It was the one where they can
shoot
in the hero phase. He had a very shooty army, so he had units of Judicators, units of the, you probably know the names better than me, the guys with the lamp, guys with the star thingy arrows.
Oh, Knight Venerators, Knight yeah. Azeroth.
And he also had the long strike, the Vanguard long strikes, which are like this
massive crossbows,
doing mortal wounds, big range, sitting there, 9 of them or 10 of them, I think he had at the back. And the Celestian Prime, which I forgot about actually until a few turns later when he decided to bring it in, and it minced a lot of my army. This game was fun. So this, I've had my Dwadin and Gotrek. So my main strategy with Gotrek throughout the entire weekend was just to fire him forward and just scare the enemy and distract them and force them to deal with him. So I did the same with Gotrek this time. Lee was trying to shoot Gotrek. So for the first three battle rounds of the game, Gotrek was basically tanking all the range firepower that came from the opponent's army, while my Dwadin were able to sit on the objectives and camp the objectives. Lee was really, really cool. He had a really, really cool tactic. He used these Aether wings, the little birds. And I wasn't prepared for these at all. So just when I thought Gotrek was going to make it into combat with his line of Judicators, the Aether wings would move into base contact with Gotrek and stop him from moving. So Gotrek would kill all the Aether wings. And the second, I try again, a second unit of Aether wings came. I think Gotrek eventually managed to pile in with his piling twice and clip one of the Stormcast characters, take the characters out. But that was it. I mean, he killed six birds and a Stormcast character in that game. I had higher hopes for him than that. Eventually, Gotrek fell. I don't know if, I know you two have, I don't know if many of our listeners have. I've seen The Fellowship of the Rings and are familiar with the scene at the end where Boromir takes arrows. That was how I imagined Gotrek falling at the end, in turn three of that battle. Up until that point, I'd managed to, I think I was in the lead for the first two turns and maybe we were even, or I'd just fall behind into. But I think on turn four, we were neck and neck on victory points. Obviously, then Gotrek had died. So then Lee was able then to shoot the rest of my army, which were not as...
I can just imagine you, Dwadin, watching Gotrek die and go, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. And then the rest of the Dwadin were shot off the board. One thing I found over this weekend was that shooting armies did very well.
There's a lot of shooting armies, yeah.
Lee said he had built this army to combat Slaanesh and Keepers of Secrets and things like that. I'm not sure how Lee got on in the rest of the tournament. We'll find out in a second how he got on. But it was a very tough list. Very, very cool game. And Lee was a fantastic opponent again. I hope I'll get to play him again at the next event and see which army he brings next time.
Lee came 24th.
Yeah, it was a good list.
A shooting Stormcast army is always... appealed,
yeah,
because there's lots of units you can choose from now.
Well, he had the Judicators battle line, the long strikes sitting at the back.
Did he have any Celestial Ballistas?
No, I didn't find any Ballistas. No,
okay.
But he put a lot of thought into this army, I think, and the strategies and how it plays on the tabletop, and that showed. It was a fantastic game, and it was really funny just watching Gotrek tank all these arrows. So that was it. A major loss for me in that game.
So you both didn't start game one representing Sprues and Brews very well.
Not really, no.
So how did game two go, Matt?
So game two, I was drawn against Kerry. So, you know, not just representing Sprues and Brews. It was Sprues and Brews versus the Hobby Room live on Kerry's stream. So, wow. You know, this is an all-important game to win and, you know, represent the channel and, you know, not show us up, Dave.
Well, I saw Matt got drawn against the Gobbos. I thought, right, great, Matt's got this one. See you later, Matt. Good luck, mate. I'll catch up with you later once you've won. You know, Archon can handle a few goblins, surely.
Yeah, you'd think so. So, yeah, so Kerry had a very squig-heavy Gloom Spike list. We had Bumble Squig, the yellow and black Gorgonian Squig, the centrepiece of the model. We had a Loom Boss on Mangler Squig, I want to say. And then, loads of Squigs and characters and little things. I thought, fine, Varangard can probably do this, let alone Archeon. Turn one, Bumble Squig comes bounding towards Archeon, doing a load of damage, exploding, Squigs turned down. I was like, okay. This is interesting.
Weren't you down to like less than half wounds on Archeon?
Yeah, Archeon taking an absolute battering by Bumble Squig, just hitting him in the face. Kerry had an amazingly poor magic phase. There was one thing we haven't mentioned is that each round they had various challenges where you could win some dice if you met some certain conditions. And the one for this round, I believe, was fail to cast a spell on a four or less. Kerry managed to do this with every single one of their spells that phase.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a very unfortunate magic phase.
It really is, but it didn't matter because Bumble Squig had it. So I brushed the remains of Squig off me and thought, okay, this is fine. We'll take out that unit of Grots and of Squigs and that objective. This will be fine. Charges in. We'll kill this. Kerry's like, oh, you could probably pile into the boss on Mangler there. I was like, well, the sensible thing to do would be just kill this unit and take the objective and burn it. Archeon can probably just kill the guy with the Slayer of Kings though and put all the other attacks on the unit. It'll be fine. Archeon fluffs all his attacks.
Is he hitting on twos, rerolling ones?
Yeah, he is.
Oh dear.
So he didn't kill the Mangler Squig. I mean, he got one through.
You should see the grin on Dave's face.
He deserves it.
Yeah.
Deserves the punishment that he gets.
So the Mangler fights back. It doesn't kill Archeon. The guy on top fights back. Doesn't kill Archeon. Archeon's got like one wound left. The Snotling on the top of the Squig finishes off Archeon with a mighty blow, felling the Ever-Chosen.
Is he like hitting on fives or something, Dan?
He's hitting on something ridiculous.
He's hitting on fives, yeah. Re-rolling sixes, isn't he?
To oh, 3 plus save on Archeon. Yeah. So that was a thing that happens.
Kevin should have got some special dice for that.
I did say she should have done. So yeah, I mean, it was a really, really fun game. And, you know, if it had been said, I would just have stayed out with him, killed the unit, then charged him next turn. But I wanted to trap the Squig in the sword, Dave.
Your eyes saw
the more crusher was looking a bit lonely inside that sword, needed a friend to play with. So yeah, and then the rest of the battle, the Varangard basically charged down, putting some pressure on objectives. Furies were being annoying. I was trying to taunt Kerry off some objective of the characters who did, and then the Furies fly away on the other side to claim the objective. Their usual shenanigans. But yeah, weight of Squigs just brought down the Varangard, and yeah, that was another major loss for me. Scorched Earth we were playing, so I didn't have many units to get onto her objectives, but I thought the ones that I've got can probably just steamroll the way through, burn them, and then just hold mine with various demons and stuff. But once Archeon was dead, Squigs just boinged up the table and started taking stuff on my side.
Oh no,
Squigs.
So if you want to watch it, it is on the twitch.tv/thehobbyroom or on YouTube as well, and on our little hobby Warhammer 366 post, I put a little link to the video in there as well.
I've started watching it. I want to see that. I want to see the moment Archeon is felled by a Grot. That's what I want to see.
Get the screenshot.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I might just spout every day. I might just send it to Matt on Facebook. Remember this, Matt. Remember.
Can
this.
You ally any Snotlings in with your character?
Yeah, I should look at that, shouldn't I? Your second game, Jay.
My second game was against Reese, who was using Uryx, and unlike you, Dave, he uses just the Uryx themselves. So
the Iron Jaws.
Yeah. He was the Iron Sons clan, I believe. Harder to hit in the first round.
Yeah.
This was another really, really cool game. This was another really, really close game. This is one of the most, not competitive games, but it came down to like crazy piling moves and things like that. So it's quite a hard work game to fight this one. Reese was a fantastic opponent. In the first round, he gave me the first turn, and I had all my dwarves set up on the objectives. I thought, okay, I'll move these dwarves back a little bit to so he can't charge me and steal these objectives off me straight away. And Reese was like, you do realise you're not going to get those points if you do that. I was like, oh, yeah. Can I put them back? Yeah, put them back. Sure, and he let me put them back before I finished my movement phase. And I think that's, I found that a lot throughout the tournament. It wasn't a win at all cost kind of tournament. That, you know, even though these people are playing to try and score high and win on the leagues.
Take backs, I think that's the term that's used for.
At the end of the day, I think most people just wanted a decent game. And if Reese hadn't said that, that game would have been over turn one, turn two. But as it was, it went down to the wire in turn five. Reese hadn't played Go Trek before. I said, do you know what Go Trek does? No. I says, I can either tell you what Go Trek does, or you can experience what Go Trek does. He chose the latter. I don't think he'll make that mistake again. when I'd finished my turn one, and then the rest of my dwarf army had stayed put on the objectives, and Go Trek had run 10 inches forward, he's like, what's this mad dwarf doing out on his own? I says, I think he'll be okay. One more crusher, I think it was 10 or so hard boys, a shaman, some brutes later, dead, round Go Trek. Reese realised this guy had to go.
Yeah.
This game, I remember this game, my highlight of this game was using the gyrocopters. the gyrocopters have such a short range gun and they're a bit flimsy, but they're so fast. And in Living City, you get a cool trait where you can move them again with a command point after they've fired. And I use that to my advantage to cap some objectives and sneak behind and things like that. I really loved using the gyrocopters. And I'm actually, I thought I'd just be painting these 2,000 points of Dwardin and just putting them in the display cabinet and never using them again. But I actually can't wait to get them back out on the tabletop again and use these gyrocopters to zip around. Really, really cool.
I was tempted by gyrocopters in a future Caradron list.
Yeah, I'd put them in. They meet the
aesthetic, aren't they?
They're such nice models. And they did really well, I thought, over the weekend. So they got me a few victory points. But yeah, this was a major loss for the Dwardin again. But very, very close. Came down to turn 5.
Very good.
And Reese was a cracking opponent.
But another loss.
Spruce and Bruce aren't doing well at this.
No, not at all. You can tell I wasn't there cleaning up the day. So I guess you had one more game on the first day of the tournament.
We did. So we were playing Gift from the Heavens, which is kind of like Star Strike, but with only 2 comets coming down.
I don't know if I've ever played that battle plan before.
Yeah, one goes down on their line, one comes down on your line. It's not got the gradient of Star Strike.
Right.
There's only like 3 areas it can land in.
I think this might be one of the only battle plans I've never played.
Well, we need to resolve that, Dave.
Yeah, we do.
I have to be honest, I'm not a massive fan of this battle plan because and as you'll see when I talk about my battle, I think if you're unlucky with where the objective comes down, it can sort of finish your game for you. I think the randomness of the objectives on it might...
It favours some armies more than others.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I kind of fell for this because the objectives fell diagonally opposite each other. Now, I haven't really got many models to stick. I think I summoned some pink horrors and they kept the one on my side. And I pretty much wanted to do a massive knife to the heart with the rest of my army to hit his side and then swing back round and reinforce the horrors if I needed to. I couldn't really afford to split the Varangard because they're not getting the auras from Archeon.
No.
And he could just teleport. I was playing Ant Paul, who I played before at the Throne of Skulls. I was against him game 1 when I was playing with Vorgrath. And he was like, that's a big dragon. And we had such a fun game with him, with his Sylvaneth dancing around the woods while this big dragon was hunting him. Well, he brought his Nighthaunt this time, who had the ability to teleport around the battlefield. And again, probably favoured them more than me because they were a bit more manoeuvrable, even though, you know, my slowest model was like movement 10. The Varangard and Arkin did a lot of damage on the charge. I think the mistake I made was, I think turn 3, at that point I should have started moving Archeon back because it was going to take him a couple of turns to get there. I wanted to make sure the stuff on his objective was dead, so he hung around and wasn't really needed because the Varangard had it. So by then he swung back. One of the Varangard units was close enough to start swinging back towards the last turn. At this point it was super, super close. He'd teleported a load of stuff and was on my objective, I was on his objective, so points were pretty much level pegging at that point. In the last turn of the game, if I could get my objective back from him, I'd win the game. Otherwise, he'd win it. That's how close it was, literally a point in it. So I thought, okay, I've got a 10-inch charge to make with the Varangard. If they clip this, I've got enough bodies in range. They got a 9. I re-rolled it. They got a 9 again. That inch would have won it for me, but I thought, like, fine, Archeon can do this. He got the charge. If he could kill the unit that was there, I had the Gaunt Summoner floating around being annoying as my extra body to take the objective. We've got this. It's fine. Archeon left one model left, didn't he?
Oh.
So we were tying on bodies, so he still had the objective. So, yeah, I was by 1 point lost the game.
This was the gorgeous painted purple Nighthawk.
It was, yeah. Such a good game. And Ant's a really cool guy. He runs some events himself.
Brilliant.
Up in Derby. He's a really fun opponent to play against. And it was, I think, games like that where it is super, super close are always quite fun.
Oh, we've experienced them quite a few times, haven't we? One of the reasons we play Sigmar so much is because we love the mechanics and how close all the games are.
Yeah,
most of the time.
At that point, I was ready to fight Archeon because not only had he failed, he died to a grot. He'd failed to kill a single Grim.
I hope you had some stern words with him that night before going back for the second day.
Gave him a bit of a pep talk that night.
To go sit on the naughty step for
a few hours. Think about what you've not done today.
Sharpen your slave sword. Yeah.
Do you send the Lord the end times? I'm not sure if you can get away with that.
Jay, how did you round off Saturday?
It was a fantastic way to round off Saturday. This was a proper grudge match. Dwarfs versus Gloomspite Gits.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Dwarfs versus Gobbos.
Yeah, this was Alex. So he's got a Gloomspite Gits army. It's mainly Spiderfang. So I think he had one unit of Stabbers. And then the rest of it was Spiderfang, Spider Riders, Arachnorox, Big Boss on a Spider, some Endless Spells. I think he had an Uruk Wizard in there as well, Shaman in there, casting something, I think. Perhaps.
Interesting.
And a Fungoid Shaman as well.
Yeah, they're okay. Cool.
This was such a fun game. Really, really cool game. So Alex was a bit unlucky in this one. This is what I was talking about before, because the objectives, both objectives came down in the same location, same part of the board. So I was able to consolidate dwarfs around that part of the board. Yeah. And by that point, I'd already done quite a bit of damage. The gyrocopters had got in and steamed a load of goblins. Some iron drakes had come on that side of the board and blasted a load of goblins. So Alex didn't really have much of a presence on that side of the board. Not least because on the other side of the board, he was trying to deal with Gotrek.
Yeah.
And there's a really cool picture where I'd ran Gotrek all the way through. He'd thrown endless spells in his way, scuttled ties to try and slow him down, but Gotrek was ducking underneath him and dodging around him, and eventually he was surrounded by a unit of Spider Riders. One combat phase later, there are no Spider Riders left, and Gotrek is standing in the middle of a bunch of corpses.
There's a fantastic set of a before he gets charged by them all, a during when he is surrounded by them all, and an after when they're all just dead.
Having said that, as impressive as Gotrek was, I have to give credit to the big boss on Spider. Now, there was a combination, I can't quite remember, I don't know the Spider-Fang rules. There were a combination of different abilities that Alex triggered. So he had his big Arachnorok spider there, and his big boss, and he was basically buffing the mortal wounds that he could do in his mortal wound output.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Alex charged his spiders into Gotrek, and before Gotrek could fight, his big boss went, and he did 11 mortal wounds to Gotrek, and I wasn't able to save them all. And he poisoned Gotrek to death. So he got his revenge on him for sure. And that was really, I was really, really impressed with how those, the mortal wound, the spider poison, I have to find out what those abilities were. Really, really smart.
I think it's a wound of six was a mortal wound.
Yeah, that's right. But then he was using command abilities and things like this to buff that ability. Really, really cool. And it's a cool theme as well. His army looked really, really good. He's still working on that. But yeah, unfortunately, I mean, he claimed the moral victory there by slaying Gotrek, but he was very unfortunate with the way the objectives come down, and unfortunately they both came down on his weaker flank. If one had come down on that side where Gotrek had died, I didn't actually have a lot there. And of course, dwarfs have only got a movement 4. It would have been quite tricky for me to even get on there. Living City combats that a little bit, but it only lets me come in from the board edge. Yeah. So I was still at least 12 inches away from an objective.
And once you're on the board, you're on the board then.
Yeah. So I have a feeling I won this game simply because I was able to set on both objectives from quite early on, and Alex just wasn't able to get across there. I think if the objectives had come down anywhere else on the battlefield, it would have been a completely different game, and that's why it's probably not one of my favourite battle plans. But Alex's armies look great. All his Spider-Fang, considering the Spider-Fang riders are old models, I was really impressed with how they looked on the round bases and the colour scheme he'd used, and his bases were very good. He's like scenic bases and terrain built onto his base. Yeah. Very cool. It was a good game. I enjoyed that, and it's a proper good way to finish a Saturday with a proper grudge match, Dwarfs versus Greenskins.
Yeah. I'm glad to see a member of the Spruce and Bruce team got a victory on day one. Right, well, you then got to have a rest.
We did have a Nando's.
It's always nice, a Nando's, cheeky Nando's. You went back fresh, day two.
We did. Arkin had a talking to.
He was geared up. He'd listened to the Rocky montage on the way to the hall.
He definitely had. So I was playing against Mark in game 4 with his Sylvaneth. So this was a gorgeous Sylvaneth army. It was nominated for Best Painted.
Yeah.
And yeah, really, really nice. He had Durthu in there. He had a load of Kernoth Hunters.
All Kernoth Hunters.
So I think he had a unit of 9 Kernoth Hunters and two with scythes. And 2 units of Kernoth Hunters with bows, and then various casters and screens of
some spy remnants.
Wow.
So yeah, so I thought those Kurnoths are pretty good. They need to die. Now we were playing three places of power. So
heroes
with artifacts or wizards can claim objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So I have.
Well, if they don't claim, they have to sit on the objective.
They have to sit, only they can score objectives.
Yeah.
So I had Archeon, I had the Gaunt Summoner. I thought, okay, this is fine. We can park Archeon on an objective and he stays there for the game. Which kind of meant I couldn't be quite as aggressive as I'd normally be because he just sat in the middle of the board and was like, come on then, take me. Now, Mark quickly realised that if he teleports his units, they cannot score because you can only score by moving onto an objective.
Mm.
Teleporting doesn't count. So if he teleported his Durthu over, he'd be sitting in the open ready for a charge from Archeon, which you don't want to be. So he had kind of planned on sitting at the back, sending in the Kurnoth Hunters to murder their way through my entire army and then claim the objectives. So he did that. He, turn one, teleports over the Kurnoths. They absolutely murder the Gaunt Summoner. I was like, okay. And that's one of my scoring
one
units
of your
dead.
50% of your heroes.
So I can't summon any horrors now, so we're going to have to deal with these guys. Don't think Mark quite realised how brutal Varangard are.
Mm.
Because he was in perfect buffet range of two units of Varangard doing their double piling shenanigans into them, who just murdered the unit.
Wow.
I think I lost a couple of Varangard in return, but I needed to kill that big unit of Kurnoth. If they'd have been able to work their way across the board in his turn, Archeon was in trouble if they got close to him. Because they do what? Quite a lot of rend, multiple damage.
I think they get three attacks each. Hitting on threes, wounding on threes, rend minus two, d3 damage.
So and they've got quite a good range on those.
Two-inch range.
And they do mortal wounds as well after the combat's finished. Yeah. Like evocators, but only one dice rather than two, I think.
So yeah, so they had to die. Archeon was just in the centre going, yeah, come on, come towards me. Well, the other unit of Varangard that I can afford to sacrifice any was they were being aggressive and poking into his lines because there was only some revenants and some characters there. And I thought, if I put a bit of threat on there, it might force him to keep Durthu away from Archeon. So I thought, Durthu can probably take Archeon in a fight.
If he gets 6 damage, doesn't he?
Yeah.
If he's near a ward, he gets 5 attacks
as
well.
So I kind of put the Varangard there. He didn't take the bait, and Durthu's job was to try and kill Archeon. He did. Archeon had his Will of the Everchosen on there and murdered him back. So it was a bit of a stalemate. But that at that point, I'd accrued quite a lead because of Archeon sitting in there, and he really couldn't afford to send any of his characters to any of the objectives that had any Varangard anywhere near them because they'd just die horribly the next turn.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good. It was a really good game. Eventually, because Archeon had died quite early, there was a potential that he could claim. Well, he could draw if he could get his Arch Revenant onto one of the other objectives. So he flew him over, and he had him lined up that if he could move onto the objective, he would draw, and then it'd go down to kill points. I was like, you do realise if I park a unit of Varangard on that objective, you're going to have to charge me if you want to take the objective. And an Arch Revenant probably doesn't want to charge a unit of three Varangard. In a similar story to game three, their run was an inch short and Archeon was dead, so they didn't have any heroes to boost it to a 6. So they couldn't do that. So he could quite safely claim that objective to mean we were tied on victory points. So it was down to kill points, and I'd already been the big unit of Kurnoths is quite a lot, and Durthu is quite a lot. He'd killed Archeon, but I had like 3 units of Varangard on the table, so that's like 900 points. And yeah, it was super, super close. I think he managed to kill one or two. It was a lot died on both sides. Final score was I'd killed 1,560. He'd killed 1,360.
Right.
So if he'd have killed one unit of Varangard, he'd have been 100 ahead. Mm. As it was, I was 200 ahead, so yeah, really, really close game. And yeah, that final turn, we were both like, measuring everything super carefully because it was, if you accidentally lose a unit, you've lost the game. That's how close it was, and really, really good game. It's a shame Archeon died. If Archeon hadn't died, I think it would have been a landslide.
Yeah.
If anything, the fact that Durthu and Archeon killed each other made it that really kind of close, tense game, which was cool. Yeah. But yeah, minor victory to Archeon.
So nice.
Finally claimed a win, and awesome game.
Excellent. How did your first day of the Sunday go?
first day of Sunday was a good start. It was against a fellow called Pete, who was a really, really cool opponent. He had a great painting army. He actually had a painting nomination as well. He was using Stormcast, and it was, at first glance, you looked at the Stormcast, it looked very, very nice, and it looked like it had all been done with contrast paint.
Yeah.
And it was only when you got close, you realised, hang on, no, these have all been hand-painted, and it looked fantastic, really, really nice.
It was very comic book style, so yeah, bold, almost, vivid colours, and like cell shading.
It was, yeah. Nice. Smart, like ice sort of theme base. The army was a little bit similar to Lee's army from the first day, so it had the long strikes, a big unit of 10 long strikes, I think. But then he had mixed up a bit. He had lots of units of the Vanguard Raptors, are they, with the like hand crossbows.
Yeah.
He had some other Vanguard units with like machine gun bolt throwers, not quite the long strikes, but. Hurricanes, are they?
Yeah. Hurricane crossbows.
And then a really, really ace-looking unit of are they Paladors? On the Griff Chargers, like the Knights, Vanguard Knights on the Griff Chargers.
Yeah,
Paladors. Yeah. They were really, really.
They looked really nice.
They did look such nice models. They are really, really nice models. What else did he have? Oh, a unit of well, you don't see these very often. A unit of Evocators on Dracolines.
Yeah, you don't see them very often. You tend to just see Evocators on foot.
Unfortunately for Pete, he only had one hero, which was his Stormcast hero on a Griff Charger,
Lord Aquila.
Yeah,
Aquila?
With the compass, the Ferric Wing compass. Yeah,
basically the hunter hero.
So he was really, really lucky with the draw here, because he only had the one hero. I had two Rune Lords, the Warden King, and Gotrek. So I had four heroes to try and contest these points with. So. What Pete decided to do, and it was a brilliant strategic move, was he tried to get the jump on me in turn one and neutralise as many heroes of mine as he could.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, the way I deployed allowed him to, because I think their vanguards, they can come in 7 inches away from it, not 9 inches away. So he managed to deploy a few units behind my lines and move the Palador Knights forward to get a good charge on my Longbeard, which was where my Warden King and one of my Rune Lords was. He killed the Warden King, my general, died. Unfortunately, he failed his charge against the Rune Lord.
Oh, no.
So he wasn't able to get into base contact with the Rune Lord. So his Paladors fought their way through my Longbeards. But what it did allow my Rune Lord to do was pile in 3 inches against his Paladors. So I piled my Rune Lord in 3 inches. Now, of course, this gave me 3 inches to try and get to the objective. So in my turn,
you ran.
I retreated from combat and ran 6 inches and got onto the objective in turn one, which meant I could cap that objective in turn one, this plucky little Rune Lord. Gotrek just moved on to the... Well, he tried to get as close as he could to the objective. He couldn't reach the objective in turn one. And on the right-hand side, I had a big block of Ironbreakers with my second Rune Lord in marching up that way. Pete sort of had the similar problem that Lee faced against Gotrek, and that was to try and bring him down at range. And, I mean, the amount of three pluses I must have rolled for Gotrek to keep him alive throughout that game was incredible. He was getting shot at by the long strikes. He got charged by the Evocators. He got blasted by the Hurricanes. Gotrek just would not go down. And he got me two or three victory points from just sitting on the middle objective. The Rune Lord, however, that capped the objective in the first turn, he would just not die either. Pete moved his general into combat with the Rune Lord to try and steal that objective off me. And, I mean, they were both as rubbish as each other in combat. They just couldn't hurt each other, really. But, unfortunately for Pete, I had that objective with the Rune Lord. And until he killed the Rune Lord, he couldn't get that objective off me. Eventually, Gotrek died. I can't remember now. He must have been shot, I think. It was in turn three or turn four. He was shot off the board. The Rune Lord finally died. But by that point, I'd amounted quite a lead in points, and then I was eventually able to take Pete's general out, so Pete had no more characters left, and I still had my Rune Lord on the far side, like basically sitting on this objective. Gotrek had distracted his army for long enough that he hadn't really dealt with that side of the board, but I mean, we sort of knew from the beginning that it was going to be a very, very tough game for Pete. I mean, even if he had managed to kill the One King, the Rune Lord, in the first turn like he planned to, he would still have had to deal with Gotrek sitting on an objective for so many turns, racking up the points. I mean, that mission was made for Gotrek, really, because his 4-inch movement, that negative is sort of negated.
Yeah, he's staying right here in the middle of the horse.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it was a brilliant game. Pete was a great opponent, and you know, it's easy when you get a matchup like that, I think, to sort of, you know, let it get you down a little bit, and you sort of don't get yourself involved in the game as such. But Pete went all the way through, and the cry he gave out when he eventually killed Gotrek, I think they could hear around the hall. So very good. And yeah, like I say, Pete got a nomination for his army. I think he has got a Facebook page where you can see the army. He posted some pictures up on the weekend. It's a very, very cool looking, very, very original looking Stormcast army.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. So I think that brings us to the final game of the tournament.
It does. Now, I was fighting more Sylvaneth, and I was fighting Harry, who had played at the Unicorn Club Night just the week before. Now, Harry hadn't played many games of Age of Sigmar, and we had a bit of a practice game. And I suppose at least Harry knew what the Varangard can do in this game. We were playing the Relocation Orb. So, similar to the last scenario, your heroes with artifacts or your wizards count as 20 models for the purposes of objectives. Luckily, I've got a massive wizard riding a three-headed dragon/horse. And someone who's really, really quick on his Disc of Zinch. So I think I had slight advantage because of that, because it didn't really matter where the orb moved, because I could just chase after it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get more points if you get it and go second. And with my ability, I know exactly who's going. So, yeah, that it was a bit of a bloodbath. He was really, really unlucky. He'd brought Alariel. He remembered to bring some of his stuff this time, which was cool. Alariel, unfortunately, I think there was a point where she could have maybe retreated and then waited a turn and then redeployed to try and get an objective. But I think she tried to deal with... I think there was one Varangard left with, like, one wound, and she wanted to kill it, which, you know, yeah, that's got rid of, you know, a third of my army pretty much. But by moving there, she was in position to get charged by Archeon, and let's face it, Alariel isn't lasting long against Archeon.
That's the thing with Alariel. She's such a big, imposing looking model, such a large base, such a nice looking centrepiece. It's sometimes easy in the heat of battle to forget that actually she's not that great.
She's more of a support fighter, isn't she?
Yeah, that's it. You're best using her against weaker units with the Ward Off Beetle, where they can do the fat five damage against hordes of, like, Night Goblins or, you know, regular troops, battle line. Against someone like Archeon, she doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah, I mean, if she'd have retreated, and even if the Varangard charged her, she'd have probably killed it, and Archeon couldn't get to her then because she was so far away, and then if the orb had moved nearer, she could then grab it, and she's worth 20 models.
Yeah.
He was also really unlucky with his teleports, the Spite Revenants.
Yeah.
Popped up to try and take out the Gaunt Summoner and failed the charge, which would have made a difference, because the Gaunt Summoner isn't that great in combat. He's only got 5 or 6 wounds.
Oh, Tree Revenants, did he?
Tree Revenants, yeah. Sorry, yeah. So, yeah, if he hadn't got that charge off, I'd have then... I mean, the Varangard and Archeon were having a merry old time murdering their way through the Sylvaneth army. If the Gaunt Summoner had died, I'd have had to try and consolidate the orb again, where, you know, with the Gaunt Summoner on the orb, I could do what I wanted with my big unit. So, again, it was really close. So there was a point in the game where I was like, you know, don't give up hope yet. If you can get your... I can't remember what carriage it was. I think it was a Branch Witch or a Branch Wraith. If they could get near enough to the objective and get the Tree Revenants charging the Gaunt Summoner, weight of numbers would swing it in his favour. And he was just unlucky. And then with that going down, Archeon just decided to murder everything left on the table.
Nice.
So it was a major victory for the host of the Ever Chosen. Harry was a really good player, and it was nice that we'd had the practice game last week and had a rematch. I don't think it was a great matchup for him, because it was really unlucky that, you know, the models in my army that could capture this objective were just massive and hard to shift.
Mm-hmm. Harry won two awards, though, didn't he?
He did win two awards. So he won Sparkliest Unicorn, which is best player. I think 4 out of 5 people voted him for best game, which is really cool. And he won the Wooden Spoon. Though, you know, to be fair...
He joined a very fabled group of...
Well, to be fair, at that point, Wooden Spoon. I was giving a run for the money there, because I was also on the bottom table with him. Luckily, I did come home with an award. I got nominated for Best Painting too, and I won a few dice over the event as well.
Excellent.
One of them was charged with 3 or more units. I can do that with my army.
So there's still only one... there's still only one Spruce and Breeze member with a Wooden Spoon. At the end of the day, it's an award. Yeah. How did your last game go, Jay?
My last game was amazing for all the wrong reasons. So, I wanted to play this particular army this weekend because I've read a lot about them, and it's the Ossiarch Bone Reapers. Matt is obviously building an Ossiarch Bone Reaper army for the campaign, so I wanted to get a feel for what
they can do. You wanted to see what you're going to get.
I'd heard the horror stories. My opponent was Kyle. Kyle was a guy I played. It was my first game I played at the last Sparkly Purple Unicorns. And at the time, he was using a Death Army with some zombie dragons.
Yeah.
Kyle was an ace opponent, and it was really cool to play him again. Obviously, it was 1-0 me going into that match. Kyle obviously wanted to even the score a little bit. So he was using the Ossiarch Bone Reapers. The Petrifax
Elite.
Petrifax Elite. Lots of Mortec Guards. I don't know, there must have been 40, 60 Mortec Guards in this army. Some Stalkers. None of the Crawlers. Had the Ark and the Black. And the Ossiarch General on Horse. I can't think what the name of that unit is.
The Cavalos.
He wasn't the named character, just a regular one. Such a nice model. His army looked great. Really, really cool. He'd gone for like a really dark black, almost looks like metallic black, but it wasn't, armour and cool. Bones, with a lots of dusting of snow. It looked like a really, really cool themed army. And, this was an interesting game. So... I deployed my usual strategy of march GoTrek as far forward as you can go, and unfortunately for GoTrek, the Ossiarch Bone Reaper scenery piece hobbled him more than anything else. He was able to reduce his charge to 1d6 rather than 2d6. Of course, I rolled a 2 twice, so I couldn't get into combat with him initially. And then when GoTrek did get into combat, he basically just bounced off the Mortec Guard.
Yeah, Mortec Guard. I think with Petrified, wow. I think it's a 3+ save rerollable.
He was down to a 2+ with some spells or something. He got it down to a 2+ with a reroll, and then each of his 5s to hit was an extra hit, or extra 2 hits or something. And then he had his death save, which was up to a 5+ death save because of some spell or something.
Yeah.
GoTrek basically just bounced off the Mortec Guard. He was killing less Mortec Guard in a round of combat than Archon was bringing back to the unit in his hero phase. He did eventually munch his way through one unit of Mortec Guard, only to get stuck into another unit of Mortec Guard that unfortunately was his doom. I think he only killed about 12 skeletons the whole game, which is depressing.
It's not an impressive, for GoTrek standards, that's not very impressive.
The Stalkers, wow.
Yeah, well, I'd met a messy end to the Stalkers.
They are insane. And they have what's really cool about the Stalkers is they have these like stances they can go into during the combat phase, but you can go into them during the combat phase. So you don't actually have to declare what stance you're in. So what Kyle did, he used it to great effect, was he would fight me, he would see how many saves I had to make, and then he would decide to enable the... Oh, there's an extra rend on those. Basically, it's all completely fine. Craig was standing over the board watching us at the time, so nothing.
I mean, I've never fought them. No. I've only watched battle reports on YouTube and stuff, but...
Nothing untoward going on there. What a cool ability. So obviously, if you've only got 3 wounds through, perhaps you don't want to do that one. Perhaps you want to go for the extra damage. But because I was making that many save rolls, add an extra -1 rend onto those things. So the Stalkers, haven't they gone into combat with some Iron Drakes I've brought on that board edge? The Dwarden don't last long to anything, really. So, but the Stalkers just minced their way through those Iron Drakes. I did have some revenge though when I brought on two more units of Iron Drakes on that side of the board. Those Stalkers are going down. Iron Drakes blazing away are good, and they took the Stalkers down. I was a bit unlucky with the orb moving around and the position it got into. Obviously the doors are quite slow and it did move away from me. It was hard for me to actually get back there. But I, to be honest, I was up against it really. I don't think even if the orb had been more
in your favour,
my favour, I would have still struggled. So one each to me and Kyle. I look forward to defeating them at the next tournament.
Yeah, I mean, for the bad rep they've got, the Bone Reapers aren't undefeatable. You know, in my game, I killed 30 Mortec Guard, which I thought was an achievement in itself. I suppose the more games you play against them, you know how they work. They are very slow. It's just working around that, isn't it?
Yeah, they are slow. I think that was one of the big weaknesses, but they are so. And the discipline point, that was so great because you say they're slow, but for one discipline point, they're adding 3 inches to the movement. And then they can still charge after that. So they're basically getting a free run and charge for one discipline point. And he was generating a lot of discipline points. I think it's quite a strong army. It's definitely not, you know, it's up there.
I don't think it's auto win. I think you need to be a good general to use.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I think you've got enough tools in your book to sort of stack the odds in your favour.
I'm really looking forward to facing yours, Matt.
Yeah, I'm just going to have some built and have some practice games with them.
Yeah,
and I think it's all about the characters. There's lots of different. Yes, you have all the different auras and abilities and spells, which takes your already really good basic Mortec Guard to absolute horrible unit to face.
Well, it was mental. We were talking, me and Kyle were, so I had a unit of 10 Longbeards. Those unit of 10 Longbeards are more expensive than his Mortec Guard, and the Mortec Guard are just incredible. Really, really good battle line unit. Yeah. He did have a lot of characters. Yeah, he had Archon the Black, he had his Liege Kavalos, he had the guy, I think, walking on the chair, and he had another fellow, so I don't know which one it was, and he had the Endless Spell with like a shard that was moving around, increasing his hit rolls or adding one to hits or something like that. Really, really fun game though. I really, really had a great time in that game. And Gotrek died.
Gotrek. So it sounds like you guys had a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, really, really fun. I would recommend going to any Purple Sparkly Unicorns events. The guys were all really nice. I know there was talk of doing a team event at some point as well.
Yeah.
I think they're keen on doing a 2-day 40k event at some point in the year. No dates yet, but I'd definitely be up for bringing something down for a 2-day event.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to, as soon as the new next event's in the diary. Yeah, because I missed out this weekend. I've got to go to the next one.
Yeah, and I believe Kerry in the Hobby Room will be back as well, streaming all our events.
Excellent. Really cool.
It was good. Really friendly guys. Got fed, which was nice. Yeah. Really nice atmosphere.
The food was all right as well, wasn't it?
It was very good, yeah. And the different prizes, the spot prizes, just add that element of fun to the
trophies.
Yeah, they'd gone to Dark Fantastic Mills for their prizes. They do a lot of resin, 3D printed scenery, which I think the scenery is really good as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the scenery in the tables were very good, yeah.
But the trophies were, I think because obviously in the early events they've been investing in the scenery and the tables, they're able to spend a bit more on the prizes and, you know, even framed certificates for all the best painted nominations. They had a prize for the person who got the most dice over the weekend. The
person who completed the most hidden agendas.
Hidden agendas. Yeah, we didn't really mention the hidden agendas. No. We've not really used them in many games. We've had a few practice ones.
Yeah.
But that's another fun element. And essentially they use that to work tiebreakers.
Yeah.
Because at these events you could often have a lot of people finishing on the same score. So factor in the hidden agendas to do your ranking.
Yeah.
And yeah, the trophies are really good. They got Sai, who's one of the unicorns. I think he does some pro painting, and it brushed all the trophies up and they looked brilliant, didn't they?
Really cool.
Hey, so can't wait till the next one.
Yeah, me too. Awesome. Well, we will put a link to the Purple Sparkly Unicorns Facebook group, so if you are in the Crew Cheshire area, they do regular club nights and meetups and different events.
And you know, even if you're further afield, there's quite a few people from, I think, Cambridge, weren't they, that had come from
what? Well, Kerry comes from Nottingham, doesn't she? So yeah, right, I think we'll let you two take a bit of a breather, but we have got our favourite part of the podcast coming up next, and that is our top three. Okay, so on to this week's top three. Now, last week we spoke about at LVO, it was announced that all the Forge World 40k models were getting new, well, most of them will be getting new data sheets, which are going to be written by the Warhammer
Rule Studios to bring them more in line with what we see in codexes.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool thing. You know, it's done by the same team, so some of the synergies and stuff should work, which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. So we decided for this week's top three that we'd like to take a look into the depths of the Forge World website and pick out three units that we'd like to see the data sheets change of, or sheets that we'd like to see come into 40k.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start this week.
Okay.
My third choice is a Mechanicum vehicle.
Ooh.
And it is the Carrigenos Assault Tank.
Okay.
I butchered that name. Can you pronounce that?
The it's a big assault tank with missiles on the back
of it.
Is
this the one? Yeah, it's the one that looks like a Battlefleet Gothic ship at the front.
Yeah, it does. I love this tank. There's two variants of this. Well, I love all the Horus Heresy Mechanicum assault.
They just like steampunk Victorian
they're
era.
So cool. Yeah. If this had 40k rules, I'd drop everything and just go Mechanicum tomorrow. I think it's such a cool tank. It's £126. I was looking at the price now, but I mean, it's got loads of warheads on the back of it. All the Horus Heresy Mechanicum stuff don't have rules in 40k. We were teased with Fires of Syraxis years ago that we were going to get them, and it never happened. It's potentially on the horizon. We keep hearing snippets that maybe it's coming.
Well, Fires is dead. It wouldn't surprise me that rather than the format of the books that we had last time, that instead we get something more akin to a codex.
Yeah.
Where you get an Adeptus Mechanicus book with all the Mechanicum kits in it.
Yeah.
A Custodes book with all the Custodes and Sisters kits in.
Yeah.
I think that's more likely the way they're going to go. Well, I hope so, because then that'd be cool.
I hope so. I think suddenly a lot of people have collected Adeptus Mechanicus if that happened.
Yeah.
Jay, your third choice.
My third choice is also an Adeptus Mechanicus unit. It's actually two Adeptus Mechanicus units, so I'm going to cheat and have two as my top three. It is the Thanatar Siege Engine and the Castellax Battle Automator.
Yes.
I love these models. Really, really cool. The Castellax are... I prefer these models to the Castellan robots I've got now. They probably fulfil a similar function, but I just prefer the look of the Castellax with the
And you
the
can give
muscles.
Them a very similar profile, couldn't you?
You can, yeah. They've got, like, the shoulder-mounted weapon. It's either the bolt cannon or the...
Phosphex, is it the ultimate?
No, Phosphex. And they have the Dark Fire, which always reminds me of, like, the Dark Eldar, Dark Lance, but I don't think it's anything like that. So the Castellax, the Thanatar Siege Engine... just looks incredible. Such a cool stomping dreadnought looking robot, bigger than dreadnought, smaller than knight, with a big plasma mortar on its back.
Yeah.
And I think it also has the bolt cannons, heavy bolt cannons underneath of it, and some weird looking grav sort of close combat weapons that it munches people with.
Yeah, I mean, as I've previously mentioned in the show, I fully approve of siege robots with plasma mortar things.
Yeah. Basically just cool big thing. Energy balls.
Yeah.
Excellent. Your third choice, Matt?
I'm going to cheat a little bit with my third choice and have four units.
Oh my days, this is escalating.
So, the Exalted Demon Lords that Forge World produce. Yeah, they look a little bit small now compared to the plastic kits from Games Workshop, but they're still brilliant models. And you can't always fit them in games because they've gone with the lore-specific numbers for their points costs. So, you know...
999 points for siege.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then the core one at 888 points.
Yeah.
He's not that good compared to the points as well. I'd rather them, even if they got a bit of a cut in the profile, but had a more manageable points limit where they could get used in games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a theme that's probably going to run through my top three list. I'd love to be able to use all four of them in an army.
Yeah,
a super heavy detachment with all four of the Exalted Demons in... as my army would be awesome.
Yeah. Could do it in Sigmar.
Could do it in Sigmar.
So just bring it to 40k. Well, my second choice has already been mentioned, and that's a Thanatar Siege Automator. You've got the picture.
Yeah. I mean, there's actually two variations of it.
Well, I prefer that one.
I think there's a
shooty version and a siege version, isn't there?
I think it's an incredible looking robot, and I would definitely get one of those if that got 40k rules.
Yeah.
So cool. So cool. But there's not really a lot else to say because you covered it, Jay. So
sorry,
there you go. Thanatar is my second choice. Also sticking with the Horus Heresy Mechanicum theme. Your second choice, Jay.
My second choice. Oh, man. This is my favourite Horus Heresy model that Forge World have done. And I would love for this guy to get 40k rules. And there have been hints and little snippets of background and fluff and stories that lead me to believe this guy is still around in the 41st millennium, and it is Constantine Valdor.
Valdor, yes.
For the Custodians, another character. He's still around, he's still kicking them out, you know, he's not died. And like I say, there are bit short stories and Black Library excerpts and stuff like that, but I think he actually is. There's a high possibility he could come back.
He's been knocking around with Lehman Russ, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's it, the spear and things like that.
I mean, when you compare him to Sanguinius, he's definitely got more odds of being alive still.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jay.
Not saying anything. Yeah, but Constantine Valdor, I mean, Trajan Valoris is already a solid HQ unit.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what Constantine Valdor would be like.
He'd be
like
Gotrek.
Gotrek in 41st millennium. In fact, that's what he should be. He should have rules like Gotrek. You can only ever do one damage to him. He gets a 3+ feel no pain save against everything. When he fights again. I'm going to house rules some rules for Valdor based on Gotrek. Hello, whereas Gotrek can only move 4 inches, Valdor will be moving 6 inches, I'm afraid.
Why not stick him on a jet bike? Make him move 12. Yeah. Why stop it? Why stop it having him on foot?
Surfing a jet bike.
Your second choice, Matt.
So, with my second choice, I'm going to cheat a little bit and have four models. Again.
Good grief.
Warhound, Reaver, Warlord, Warbringer. Titans.
Okay.
So, Titans are amazing models. They've got impressive stat lines. They're really, really cool. The only problem is, you can't really use them in a game, unless you're playing a ridiculous apocalypse game. I would rather them take a bit of a cut to the profile, still, you know, be, you know, 1,000 points maybe.
I think this is just a rinse and repeat of what Matt said in his
third choice. It is pretty much. But yeah, the being able to use Titans with, you know, a better profile than a Knight, but not as ridiculous, and be able to use those models in a game,
yeah,
I think would be really cool, and probably get more people to buy Titans as well.
And which Games Workshop want to do? Do you want to sell more Titans?
A Warhound at 1,000 points with a suitably reduced profile, so you can still take 1,000 points of stuff with it, but you've got a cool, impressive model that isn't really that much bigger than a Knight model. I think that'd be a fun thing.
Yeah.
Maybe have the Reaver at 2,000 so you can use that against an army. And then, yeah, keep the Warlord or something ridiculous, but
yeah,
it just lets you use those models more often.
Yeah.
Or they could just do what they did with the Tau Supremacy suit.
Yeah, or that.
And just make it cheap.
Ace, we're already round to our top choices. And I'm going free for free from Mechanicum with my choice. Because I've taken screenshots, I almost pressed the wrong button then. My top choice... Because at the moment, for HQ units, for AdMech, you've only got one special character, and that's Call, and then you've got your Tech Priest. You've obviously got the new Tech Priest from Kill Team. What I think they should bring into 40k and give 40k rules is the Archmagos Dracovac.
Oh, yes, such a nice model.
Or you could just take him as an Archmagos, as you can in Horus Heresy. I can't remember what the thing he's mounted on is called.
Floating...
The floating platform.
Yeah.
Now, I thought maybe we would never see anything like that in 40k. But then the Sister Battles came along, and they've got a special character that's got a floating pulpit. So I think this guy should make his way into 40k and be an alternative choice to Call, because you see Call in a lot of lists because he's the only named character. He's really good. He gives you rerolls. Otherwise, you're just taking like your basic tech priests. I'd like to see him giving Call some competition as your main HQ choice.
I'm going to throw in a cheeky honourable mention at this point.
Go on.
And this is, I can't remember the guy's name, but the Dark Mechanicum Spider-Fella. He looks like an absolute nightmare to build and paint, but that'd be cool, wouldn't
it? Like the thingy from Lost in Space. Evil Doctor.
Your top choice, Jay?
My top choice, David... is Sanguinius.
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 I mean, this is another great model from the 30k range. You know, okay, there are rumours that he may have died 10,000 years ago. Not confirmed. That book's not been written yet.
Not
it's
yet.
Just hearsay. There are images in the rule book of some winged hero of the Imperium fighting Nurgle Death Guard.
There's a diorama in Warhammer Worlds.
Yeah. There's some famous artwork with him fairly dead looking in it.
Yeah, but I know. But then, you know, in the past, there have been rules for characters that have been long dead that they keep the data sheets for, and you know, in fantasy you could, you know,
you could argue he's an angel, and what do angels do best?
Flap wings.
But they resurrect themselves, they come back.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah. Death isn't the handicap it used to be.
No, it definitely is not. Definitely is not. I hope for your sake, Jay, the Sanguinius, at some point,
thanks, Dave.
Maybe when you're in your twilight years and you can only just pick up a paintbrush, they release Sanguinius rules for 40k.
Yeah, not in my luck.
Your top choice, Matt.
I'm going to cheat a little bit with my top choice. And rather than a single model, I'm going to have an entire army.
Wow.
Codex Death Corps of Krieg.
Oh, yes.
I think this. I hope this is what we're going to see. We've seen a lot of Krieg units resurrected recently. We've got the Gorgon back. That is a complete. It's one of the few complete armies from Forge that you can currently buy. Mm-hmm. I know there's the Elysian drop troops, who unfortunately are no longer available. These guys must be one of the most popular Forge World Rangers. They're certainly still now really impressive models, and I think it'd do them justice to have essentially a proper codex with all the abilities and stratagems and relics. It makes them into a bit more of a competitive, usable force. Because at the minute, really, you're better off using, you know, Astra Militarum.
Yeah.
Well, you use a combination, don't you? The Astra Militarum book in the index.
Yeah. So I would like to see these get their own bespoke book full of mortar-filled goodness.
Excellent. I think, actually, like you say, with them bringing models back, that is a surefire sign that they're doing well.
They're supporting them, yeah.
Yeah, so...
They're an important regiment in the lore as well, you know. They're quite a front and central Astra Militarum regiment, aren't they? So they deserve a bit of love, I think.
Yeah, you know, these are guys so hard. They don't run away when they get shot because they nuked their own planet to destroy chaos. That's pretty hardcore.
Look, they still have a planet. Not like Cadia. Oh no, did you just say they nuked it?
They nuked it, yeah.
It's still alive though, isn't it?
You can wear respirators and hazmat suits and stuff, it's fine.
Cockroaches still live.
Cockroaches. Giant cockroaches. I think that was a really cool top three. I can't wait until... I don't think we're even going to have to wait that long for these new indexes.
I've got a feeling, if the rumours are true and we're getting a new edition of the game in the summer, I imagine these would drop at the same time, or around about
to
then.
Fall in line with the whatever changes in 40k. I think we should move on to the community top picks. So while we prepare our data slates for your top threes, grab one last brew for this podcast. I'll be right back. The end of this week's podcast is nigh. But before we wrap this up, we have got the community top three picks. Just some replies on Twitter this week. So, Matt, do you want to read them out?
Yeah, so Pete Allison has a few 40k models he owns. So the Acastus Perfarion.
Oh, yes.
His Perfarion's so cool as well. Golden Demon winning Perfarion.
Yeah.
The Knight Magria, which is the Mechanicum one. And the Admech Triaros, which I think is the variant build of that tank that you like.
Yeah, I think it is.
Easiest to pronounce.
Fabius Fulgrim says the Galva Brock, they're cool, they're like the mutated... Oh, yeah.
Uber-possessed,
yeah. Alfarius, because he's possibly still kicking around.
If he's
around.
Coming back, Sanguinius, I want a Sanguinius state sheet.
And Alpha Legion Headhunter Squads.
Mm, nice.
Awesome. Leaky Cheese says he wants to see some Forge World models that don't currently have any 40k rules. The Glaive Super Heavy Special Weapons Tank. The Saber Tank Hunter. And the entirety of the Mechanicum range. Somber Mine, Knights in general. There are some really cool knights as well.
Yeah, there is.
Flyers in general. And Leviathan Dreadnoughts. Have rules, but we could have a new version of them.
Yeah.
Lancer Chris, the Lightning Lock Moriax. A second Lightning Lock Moriax. And a third Lightning Lock Moriax to make it a detachment.
I think he likes them.
And Stephen Richardson ends just with... Make Grot Tanks great again. And I think that's a good way to round up.
That's a good way
podcast.
To round up. I think if they made Grot Tanks great again, Matt would get an army of them.
I have been so tempted to
get some baseball caps made with that slogan on.
Great again.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, that's been another fantastic episode. Another tournament in the bag for you guys.
Yeah.
What is next week's top three, Matt?
So next week, we want to know your top three boxed games or battle boxes of all time. So we've got a few coming soon, and we've had a few decent ones recently, but yeah, there might be some golden oldies that you want to shout out as well.
Yeah. Back from Fantasy or previous editions of 40K or anything.
Or even other systems.
Ooh, cool. So we'll leave you with those thoughts. If you want to get your top threes in early, you can do on social media. All the social media links will be given at the end of the podcast. And I think all that's left for us to say is we'll see you again next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. If you like what you've been listening to, please do give us a share and a comment if you're listening via Apple Podcasts. For further content, please check out spruesandbrews.com, and you can contact us on Twitter @spruesandbrews or over on Facebook, facebook.com/spruesandbrews.